So welcome everybody to this day long on Anatta. And I really want to commend you for showing up today, because Anatta is, it's just really not a very easy subject. It can feel really confusing, abstract, uncomfortable, even a little bit frightening. And so it's challenging to investigate it. And I think we teachers are all feeling how challenging it is to teach about it. And yet, you know, it's so important. We really need some understanding of this concept. It's crucial for our practice. And now our founding teacher, Rodney Smith, has said that when he was first authorized to share the Dharma, his teacher, Buddhadasa, gave him these instructions. Teach Anatta and don't be afraid to shake the people. And those of us who are Rodney's students, we know he really took those instructions very much to heart. And now here we are today carrying on this tradition of teaching Anatta. And it's, I feel really humbled to be doing it and honored also. As for shaking the people, well, that isn't really our intention today, but if you do find yourself shaken or disturbed or confused by this topic, you shouldn't be surprised or feel like there's anything wrong with you, because I think it's part of the practice for most of us. So when we explore the first noble truth of suffering, we're encouraged to understand the three characteristics: dukkha, or suffering, anicca, or impermanence, and anatta, or not self. And the first two, you know, they may be pretty hard to really accept on a very deep level, but we do have some kind of sense of what these are. You know, it doesn't take a lot of reflection to recognize that unpleasant experience is something that's part of life for everybody. We always encounter it. It always is there some of the time. And it's not too hard to recognize on some level that change and impermanence are part of life. You know, we know how the weather changes, the seasons change. We change with time and as we age. So we might not always want to accept impermanence and change, or accept the truth of painful experience, but, you know, we know something about how this is the way it is. But when it comes to anatta or not self, though, it's a different story. You know, this concept can seem really quite foreign. You know, we feel, of course, you know, we exist. This is my body. This is my mind. This is my history, my family, my community, my life, all of that. We just naturally think that. So when we hear about not self, we're not sure what to make of it. It's just this kind of strange teaching. And yet it's really so important. And an understanding of anatta is so important because it really frees us from all of the dukkha that's associated with self. You know, all that pain we feel from always wanting to become, to be someone different, to be someone better, to be the way we think we ought to be, and yet always feeling that no matter what we do, somehow it's really never quite enough. We never get to that perfect me. And when we're caught up in this cycle, it's really difficult. You know, we feel as if we're not perfect, then somehow we're worthless, and yet we never can be perfect. So there's a lot of pain and self-hatred, all these kind of things, and all sorts of efforts to do things to become what we think we ought to be. And we can do a lot of damage to ourselves and to those around us in this effort to be this perfect me. So it's really important for our own welfare to explore these teachings of anatta and realize that this perfect me that we're chasing is really an illusion. And it's good to know that the teachings on anatta don't actually say that we don't exist or that there's no self at all. It's more like the self as we assume it to be is not what we assume it to be. I've heard Joseph Goldstein say that his teacher, Manindra, put it this way. The self is real, but it isn't really real. Or in other words, it's not real in the way we think that it's real. So we all tend to think that this experience we call self is something that's very solid and stable and permanent and separate. And, you know, we know that we change over time as our bodies grow and age and the roles we play in life might change. But it feels as if there's always that kind of something there, that something I call me, that's always there and doesn't change. And yet what the Buddha teaches and what we can actually discover for ourselves in our practice is that this isn't really true. We have the experience of self, all right. And it's important for us to have a healthy, you know, functioning sense of self as we navigate the world. But it just isn't as solid or stable or permanent or separate as we tend to think that it is. I remember one of my teachers, Michelle McDonald, saying that everybody likes the idea that the self isn't separate in the sense that, you know, we are part of something larger than ourselves, but not so much the idea that the self isn't solid and the self isn't stable and the self isn't permanent. And yet we really need to have some understanding of all of these aspects. Having understanding that we're interconnected and part of something larger than ourselves is a really good thing, a really important thing. And understanding that the self is not separate can come through seeing that we're connected to other beings in an essential way and that we're part of the natural laws of life. And that's an important understanding. But if that's the only perspective that we see anatta from, we aren't getting the full picture. We also need to see the non-solidness and the impermanence part. So I'm going to focus more on that right now, and then we'll fill out the picture later in the day. So there are two teachings about not-self that are really helpful for me in understanding what the Buddha was talking about here. First, there's the teaching on the five aggregates. So in the Buddhist understanding, the self is not so much a solid thing as something that arises from this collection of these component parts, these five aggregates. So the aggregates are form, or the body, feeling, which is the sensations of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, perception, you know, recognizing, identifying things, mental formations, which is all of those thoughts and ideas and everything we think about, whatever this object is that comes with us, and consciousness or awareness. So when we come in contact with something through our sense doors, through sight, through hearing, through smelling, through tasting, through touching, and through the mind too, then these five aggregates arise. And when they come together, they create this experience of self, you know, the sense that I'm hearing, I'm seeing, I'm touching, I'm thinking, you know. And that experience is real enough, but it's not a solid and permanent thing. It arises with these aggregates and it passes when the object and the aggregates pass away. So in some sense, this self is something that's really constantly coming into being and passing away. It comes and it goes and it comes and it goes, and it happens so fast that we don't know and it feels solid. And this is a process that just happens, and if we understand and recognize something about it, then it's not a big problem. But a lot of times we don't understand and we make this experience of self into something that's permanent, that's me, that's mine, that who I am, that defines me, and then we suffer. We can also see this formation of self in the cycle of dependent origination, which says something a little bit more about how we get stuck in this sense of solid self. So just as with the five aggregates, with dependent origination, we also start, you know, here we have this body with the senses, and we come into contact with some object, sense it as being, you know, something that's pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And if things just kind of stop here and we know the object is known and its characteristics are known and its qualities are known, then it just kind of passes away on its own time, you know, then, you know, no problem. It's just an experience that comes and goes. But a lot of the time we're not so balanced in that way. We want the pleasant thing, or we don't want the pleasant thing. And if we continue with this state of mind, pretty soon we find ourselves clinging to the pleasant thing, pushing away the unpleasant thing. And then we hear the kind of feel the self starting to raise its head with these feelings of, oh, I want that. I don't want that. And there's this becoming, you know, we become this self who wants this thing and is trying to get it, or doesn't want this thing and is trying to get rid of it, or the self that has this, the self that doesn't have this, the self that is this or isn't that. And so we turn something that's really a process and basically impermanent changing experience into something that we cling to as this solid and permanent me. And we see with this cycle of dependent origination that craving is a big part of this selfing process. And it's especially clear when we get stuck in this desire to become, where the simple wanting or not wanting transforms into some idea of who we are and who we want to be, who we will be when we get the thing we want or get rid of the thing that we don't want. And so we can also see, too, that when we're stuck in this and there's always this endless cycle of becoming something else, it really sort of projects our feeling of me into the future. So the I can just keep being forever, potentially. And yet this I is just something that we create more in our minds that isn't so solid and permanent. So when I talk about this, these five aggregates and the cycle of dependent origination, I know that in a way it can come across more as a theories or ideas. And maybe it makes sense to some of you. Maybe to others of you, it doesn't really make a lot of sense or doesn't seem true. But through our practice, we can begin to really experience these teachings directly and discover their truth for ourselves. And so there are many different ways that we can practice with and investigate. Anatta and Suze and Judith are going to talk more about that in a little while after my talk later this morning. But to just kind of get the conversation started, I'd say that for me, it's when I direct my attention towards the mind, towards the thoughts and emotions, that I can really best see the truth of Anatta. I think we all kind of recognize that our body changes and, you know, what we're doing in our life changes. And yet, as I mentioned before, there's this sense of this essential me that's defined by our thoughts, our beliefs, the way we feel about things. That even if everything else changes, there's that, you know, that voice in our heads that's me, you know, as, you know, Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. And I think in a way we kind of really feel like that's true, that our thoughts and feelings are us. But when we actually are mindful of our thoughts, we see that all those different things that arise in our minds really aren't under our control at all. Any strange thing might arise in the mind at any time. You know, images, memories, fantasies, fragments of thoughts. You know, when we're really mindful, we just see these things coming and going and look at this strange melange of stuff. And I think when we see that, we might say to ourselves, well, what is all this stuff anyway? All this junk. This isn't me. This isn't mine. This isn't who I am. You know. And so we can see maybe that voice in our heads isn't really us. After all, we try to make it into a solid, sensible thing, but actually not so much. And emotions are like that too, maybe even simpler to see. We often feel like our emotions are part of what defines us. You know, we're an angry person or a fearful person or a calm person. And yet, when we really notice our emotions in a mindful way, they change. Sometimes there's anger, but many times it isn't there. Sometimes there's fear. Often there's not. So we start to see that our emotions change. They arise in response to the conditions around us, and so no one emotion is always there. None of them define us. If we pay attention, we see that these mind states of anger or fear or whatever it is, they're not me. They're not permanent at all. And as we see these things, I think we also can begin to understand some aspect of the self not being separate. That all these thoughts, emotions, things, even the sense of me, the feeling of me, really arises in the mind according to causes and conditions that are there at that moment. And all of these things, the thoughts, emotions, our feeling of me, also will change when the causes and conditions change. And so, you know, the self really isn't separate in that sense. It's the product of the causes and conditions that cause it to come into being, and where it's influenced by all sorts of things. And so in this way, we begin to see that it's really a delusion to think that what arises in our minds and what we think of as me is really all about us and really a definition of us. It comes due to all sorts of conditions. And, you know, sometimes, especially when we're doing an intensive practice, as we are when we're on retreat, we can start to see this, the process of the mind more clearly, and we can see anatta even more deeply than what we might see with the emotions coming and going, thoughts and coming and going. Maybe we even notice these various aggregates as they arise and can really recognize them as different activities of the mind, not so much me or mine. Or we might find that all of that identification, so, you know, when that happens, the way that we feel like the aggregates are ourself, that kind of loosens a little bit. Or we might find that all of these different parts of identity that we call me, you know, our personality, our life situation, our likes and dislikes, as we sit for a longer period, they just kind of fade away into the background, and maybe everything falls away until there's only just this kind of very light sense of identifying with that which knows, this sense of I am that which is knowing whatever is happening. And then even that may fall away. Even that may cease. Maybe there'll just be silence. So there are lots of different ways we can come to know anatta or have insight in anatta. And when we do, we really begin to question the idea of the permanent self. Now, of course, as I think many of you know, when we have an insider experience like this, it isn't as though we kind of stay that way and our sense of self permanently just kind of disappears, you know, and we're not there and we're off in this kind of weird no man's land. You know, that doesn't happen. Our normal functioning comes back pretty quick. Our sense of self, our sense of identity, all that comes back pretty quick. But our understanding, that really does change. We might be confused and we might not know quite what to make of this experience we've had, but on some level, when we see one of these, have this kind of insight, we know that this self isn't really as solid or separate or permanent as we thought. And we know that all of this mental activity that it's so easy to be so absorbed in and take as us on some level really isn't me or mine or what I am. So the title of this retreat, what it says really is true. That understanding self and not self really does lead to freedom. And it is a really liberating teaching. It can free us from the painful attachments we have to our roles in life, to our status, to our self-image, from all the grasping and the clinging that goes with all of that, of trying to achieve the self we think we should be and feel like we're not. But it's also true that our experiences of not self and our insights into not self aren't necessarily blissful experiences. Over time, they lead to joy and freedom, but at the moment, maybe not so much. You know, they can be disorienting and familiar and even kind of frightening. And since there might be a sense of this me kind of falling away or dissolving, insight into anatta might bring up our fears of death. And so, well, on one level, we may really want to know this truth of not self. On another level, we might really not want to know. There's a part of us that's, So as you investigate this, you may feel quite a bit of resistance. Don't be surprised if you kind of feel spooked at one point, and if maybe a part of your mind just sort of rises up and says, nope, not going to go there. Nope, nope, not good, not safe. Or the resistance might be more subtle. You might find yourself getting really close to this realization and this quiet and this dissolving, and then the mind will come up with some kind of a distraction that moves you away. I remember being in retreat, and things were getting so quiet and so, you know, non-formed, and all of a sudden, boom, this Prince song starts playing in my mind, and I'm like, where did that come from? Well, all of this, you know, calm and everything kind of was out the window at that point. And you may not have that kind of experience, or you may. If you do, you know, it's quite normal. So be gentle with yourself. Be patient with yourself today in this exploration, and really take your time with these teachings. And if you get this feeling of, don't want to go there, let that kind of be and give it time. We all get there in our own time and our own way. So that's our start on this subject of anatta. So we have a few minutes for a couple of questions, if anyone has a question right now. Somebody's in the waiting room. Oh, okay. Candace will let them in. I don't think I can really do that from here. Oh, yes. So any questions? Maybe this is enough to take in. You just want to think about it. Or online, any questions or comments from anyone online? Oh, there is a question. Oh, okay.
It's not necessary. Okay, I found it too loud. I'm going to try without the mic.
Okay. It was too loud for me when people were using it. This is kind of a quibbling question, but I've, you know, listened to lots of stuff, read stuff about the not self, but I've never heard anyone associate it with the attainment for a perfect self. And as you were talking, you know, we're all aware of our changes and stuff. I'm just not, again, this is probably quibbling, but it just, the idea that somehow our inability to grab the concept of not self, maybe for some people it's connected to attaining a perfect self, but I don't feel like I'm trying to attain a perfect self, but I still find it challenging.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. And I think bringing this up is useful because we all have our own different areas where we get stuck. And I think I have tended to have this sense of, maybe perfect isn't the right word. I don't think there's this sort of thinking, oh, I'm going to be perfect, but this sense of somehow something is lacking and more must be done to be a good enough self. And I think a lot of people share that kind of feeling, but that might not be your experience. It might be something a little bit different. It might be, well, I don't know. It might be something a little bit different. So if I talk about something that isn't quite your experience, trust your own experience in just recognizing that it isn't the same for everybody. And because it isn't quite the same for you doesn't mean that's wrong. So thanks for bringing that up. Yeah. Okay. Maybe one more? Yes.
A Dharma friend of mine uses this explanation of the word shame, S-H-A-M-E, should have already mastered everything. And so it's a little different from perfection, but this expectation you should already know what you maybe don't know yet. And I think sometimes that comes up even in our practice of this expectation that it should already be there. Anyway, I wanted to share that use of the word shame.
That's a really good point. That's how it comes up for some people, you know, having that idea. Or it might be associated with a role in life, you know, like your whole self is bound up with being a parent or a certain, you know, your job or something like that. And you have an idea about how you ought to be because that is what your role is. And you suffer because you feel you are not. So there are a lot of ways that can be experienced.